Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. This is World Watchers program number 689. It's February 18th, 1985. I made a mistake last week when I announced the day that I would be up at De Anza College. It's not March the 7th. It's March the 6th at 7:30 on Wednesday, not on Thursday. The subject will be Women in Political Research. This is their 11th anniversary of Women's History Week. We're doing it in the evening so that some people that work during the day will be able to attend. And it was a very nice group last year, getting together, asking questions, and getting to know them in the Bay Area. David Emery and Nip Tuck have World Watchers on two different stations up there for 4 hours of World Watchers up in the Bay Area, San Jose, Santa Cruz, Cupertino. And so there are a lot of listeners to this kind of research, and they are very knowledgeable about what is going on. They follow it every week. So it's good to meet with people who keep up on the subject and not, I used to at one time go to colleges where people didn't know what the broadcasts were like or what you were doing. And you spend so much time explaining that you can't really get into the substance of the material. But here these people are very well informed, and so it's always a good time to get together. The De Anza College, you can call them if you don't have the number or know where it is located, the Student Council Chamber, March the 6th, not the 7th. I hope I've got it right this time. Okay. NBC this last night, Sunday night, had the Hitler's SS. I don't know if you saw it or not. It was 3 hours. I was wondering how they would do it in fiction form. I personally thought it was one of the finest things I'd ever seen on television. It reminded me of the play Good that I described for you a couple of years ago that I saw in New York. This was about a family, two brothers with different views of the Gestapo, a baby brother who was just born, and they weren't terribly poor and they weren't wealthy, middle-class Germans, and it was the shaping of their personalities into the terror machine, how people otherwise civilized can get on an escalator that leads them to one murder after the other when they see their professors, their friend, their bosses killed, and the inability of people to function when they, one brother tells the long friend to leave, get out of the way, say you're sick, and he doesn't want to go to another country, says I can't learn another language. They just as soon die. They have nowhere to go and don't know what to do. And the meanness of the minds in the Gestapo was what this movie was about. I'm tired of seeing, and I might have said before, these Holocaust movies with people behind the barbed wire and the piles of bones and the horror of this mass accumulation of death. Where were those people from 1919 to 1933? All silent, all selfish, all enjoying themselves? Didn't read a newspaper, didn't listen to a radio, didn't know anything that was going on. Did they vote? Sure, they were victims, but they are the victims of their own ignorance, just like most people today are going to be the victim of their ignorance in this country. Can't feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for myself because I go down with them, but I can't feel sorry for future victims at any time or currently, because every opportunity to learn and to know is available if people want it now, and then it'll be too late. It was too late for them. But the mind of the aggressor, the person who commits the acts and the murders, the random murders and the systematic slaughter and the killing machine, the ordinary person that becomes so hateful and violent, this movie was about their minds, and I thought it was a particularly very good movie. Mr. Westmoreland, retired General William C. Westmoreland, settled out of court and agreed not to go up to the jury line with his case that would go to the jury next week against CBS. Keep in mind how what a powerful general he was through the entire Vietnam War, and his boss through that war is Mr. Fritz Kramer. And what he's really admitting is that I don't want those people on the jury to decide if I lied to the American people, if I fudged the figures, if I was responsible for things that happened that didn't go well. I happen to think, I got a flash, that maybe the reason he settled now instead of giving CBS the millions of dollars is that he can work with people like Kissinger Associates and private corporations and get the money to buy CBS instead of paying them the money, use the money to buy them out. Mr. Fritz Kramer was his supervisor over the Vietnam War. He was plans officer in the Pentagon, but Kissinger's mentor ran Westmoreland's operation, literally did. And so Kissinger's Kissinger associates could buy CBS in an hour if they wanted it. So I thought maybe he would take this money that he, instead of giving it to the people who exposed him, use it to buy them up. And maybe that's what Jesse Helms had in mind in the first place. So he called out now, but it may be the beginning of more trouble for CBS. Sometimes the victory turns out to be very painful in the long run. That doesn't mean you go to defend what you said, and it's great that they did it, but it may be a very painful victory. We'll wait and see. The President of the United States was vacationing this last weekend out at his ranch. He has a very nice little cottage there, a 74-year-old president. He says, I don't know how much longer I have to be there. I hope he wasn't thinking about the assassination attempt that came on him before. He says, look at another way at my age. How many more years do I have? He has spent 12% of his presidency, 171 days at the ranch so far. And then he said, this particular place casts a spell on you. When you get there, the world is gone. The week that he was there, the students and the colleges were raising a fuss as if they didn't know these issues when they voted for him. The money cut off for education. The farmers are ready to parade in Washington. The farms are closing. And McNeil Lehrer Report had programs on suicide of farmers and the tragedy of losing their farms. Our great farm belt being shaken up by a man who wants to get more weapons and therefore has to cut education and farms. And then the transportation system in jeopardy was subject of discussion on the news broadcast, cutting Amtrak and the means of getting in and out to cities and around the United States. Transportation, education, food, and farms, all of them crying in the week that he's sitting up on the mountain. But he has his own mind insulated from all that, so that doesn't matter to him. In the book California Incorporated by Joel Kotkin and Paul Grabowitz, it was published in 1982 by Rawson and Wade, there's a chapter called The Rise of Reagan, and it accounts for why his mind is peaceful, and the world doesn't exist on that top. It tells about friends of Ronald Reagan who met in 1965, who shaped the career of Nixon and Goldwater and George Murphy, a hardened corporate operator since World War II. This is part of the gang of the World Commerce Corporation, who got together on a nice day in Pasadena with a well-connected Pasadena attorney named Robert Mardian. Now, Robert Mardian was the fellow who accompanied G. Gordon Liddy to the National Archives to watch the pictures of the Nazis. And Liddy bragged about a friend of his being in the Odessa. That's in Jim Hogan's book, and I'll get more onto Liddy later. Both of them were entranced by the Gestapo and the SS, the very thing that was portrayed on NBC, that three-hour docudrama, was what G. Gordon Liddy and Robert Mardian admired in Hitler's SS. And it was at the home of Mardian where this group got together in 1965. Mardian was Assistant U.S. Attorney General. It was under John Mitchell with Richard Nixon and played a role in Watergate. He also formed the LEAA and was part of wanting to fund the mind control programs around the United States, and particularly the one of Jolly West and Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese out at UCLA. It goes on to say, besides the old loyalists, Mr. Salvatore and Tuttle and Rubel, at this gathering, there was Stanley Plog, PLOG, president of Van Nuys-based Behavior Science Corporation. It tells how they raised a little money and sent Reagan on his way speaking and running for governor. He also was paid by General Electric for several years to go all over the United States, another member of the World Commerce Corporation and a network for espionage and links to IG Farben. That's where he traveled from the movie days until the Hollywood gang reached him and said, now it's your turn. It goes on to say in this book, California Incorporated, Stanley Plog's Behavior Science Corporation was assigned the important task of educating and shaping the new standard bearer. Several years ago, I believe in 1980, 81, when Reagan was running, I went into the mind control of him. This is a different book, California Incorporated. Through Plog, Reagan, for the first time, learned how to be briefed and pumped full of quotable statistics, which soon became a Reagan trademark, and they would steer the man through the rapids of the California Republican primary, held and assisted by Lynn Nofziger, formerly of the San Diego-based Copley News Service. Lynn Nofziger also was active with Robert Mardian and John Mitchell and the Nazi Party in California, the one that links to Edgar Eugene Bradley and Clay Shaw and Reverend Gale, Colonel William Gale, Reagan's friends. This teamwork got their claws on him. They had him groomed from his early Hollywood days, and after Nixon was in line, "You're next," they tapped him on the shoulder. This book, California Incorporated, on the cover, it says, "The people who own California control your future, whether you like it or not." Some people must like it, for they voted for him, you know, heavily, so they don't know what they're getting, but they voted for Hitler also. Now, I mentioned the last few weeks, this Mr. Pierce, William Pierce, the professor, the Ph.D., who wrote the Turner Diary on how to kill all the Jews and blacks in America and hang them from ropes and so forth. And I've mentioned several times his links to Air Force contracts and Alexander Haig's United Technology, the Brad Whitney Group in Connecticut that Haig became the president of before he became head of NATO. The Washington Post had a story about Mr. Pierce's organization called the National Alliance. This was February the 4th, 1982. And the thrust of the story was that Ronald Reagan wanted to take off the restrictions. For 10 years, the IRS was not funding racially segregated private schools, and the purpose of those schools came after the Civil Rights Act to separate the whites from the blacks, put them into white Christian schools and away from the black people, making it an education by choice. You get a tax break, and you don't have to meet with the black people, you can stay with your own kind. And the National Alliance was cut off during the Carter administration and before because they published books and instructions on murdering and kidnapping of blacks and Jews. But the legal problem came to a head in 1982 where they wanted their tax break. If you're going to give it to the segregated schools, you have to give it to us. And Ronald Reagan was issuing, you know, orders for these people to take your hands, the government hands, off these private sectors and give them the same breaks that other schools have. And the head of the National Alliance, the leader, said that his group was more mature and sensible than most Nazi groups, although they held similar beliefs. How can you be more mature and sensible? On how do you kill? Instead of killing on the streets, you kill, take them to Auschwitz so you don't have to see them dying on the streets. The first Gestapo in this movie, you know, they just shoot them right on the spot. Then later they take them to Dachau or camps so that other people aren't terrorized by what they're doing. He says that he's more civilized, even though he sells stickers and advertises bumpers that say, "The Jews are our misfortune," and "Build white unity," and so forth. Well, the National Alliance, this William Pierce, who wrote the Turner Diary, that's the group that Ronald Reagan wanted to put them back with the tax deductions for the kind of things they're printing on how to kill and spread terror in the United States. Now, Republican Representative Larry Craig, you might remember this name now, C-R-A-I-G, from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, said that members of the Aryan Nations Church in his area have every right not to be discriminated upon because of their beliefs and practices, as long as they don't use violent tactics. Now, what the Aryan Nations does, it has a group that get together and meet on Sundays, and then when they get violent, they disassociate. If they rob a Brinks bank in Ukiah for $3 or $4 million, they say, formerly members of the Aryan Nation, even though they still pray there on Sundays and the families go there. If they rob a shopping center, $500,000, they say, formerly a member of the Aryan Nations. When Alan Berg was shot in Denver, Colorado, they can say the gun was found in Mr. Yarbrough, formerly a member of Mr. Richard Butler's church, but now on his own. Once they get the instructions, the addresses, the ammunition, the stockpiles of ammunition of where to go, then, and if they're caught, if they're not caught, they're still part of the activity. It's like the CIA or the State Department or anyone in public service. They're always linked to one particular group, but once they're caught, they are former members. So he is saying they have the right. And he said the moment you start restricting the freedoms of them who want to do what they believe in, it's easy to restrict your freedom. Well, the record shows that they threw Jews out of the area that had restaurant there and were painting swastikas on it, that they kicked the blacks out of the area because they wanted pure white Idaho. They do not restrict the freedoms of other people, and that is why they should be curtailed, because they terrorize and send them out of the state and out of that northwest area, because they say that's the cleanest and most lily white in the United States. And then Representative Larry Craig, the Republican, said, "You can't dictate what they're doing. We're not a dictatorship. The only way to get rid of them is to become a Soviet Union." So what you have is you either have terror on the right, the Nazi Party, the Klan, the Posse Comitatus, who are publishing books like Mr. Pierce on how to drop atomic bombs on Washington, D.C., and how to kill federal agents, or you have communism. What happened to a democracy in between where everyone has equal rights? He's saying you have one choice or the other. Now, I'm going on now to something that is endangering our democracy or our freedoms around the world. It's very subtle, like a sledgehammer on your head. And I want to share with you a four-part item of Ronald Reagan and a religious organization or group that ties into many of the things I've been talking about in the last few weeks, but must be analyzed clearly every time the matter comes up. The National Public Radio had a broadcast of their annual Washington Prayer Breakfast, and somebody typed up the transcript of this and mailed it to me February the 1st, 1985. They were bringing together leaders from around the world, the National Public Radio said, and Jim Engel, E-N-G-E-L, was reporting, and these are quotes. He said, "President Reagan said, there are regular prayer meetings in the House and in the Senate that are not widely known to the public. He said members of the media have known about this, about these meetings, but that they have been not known, as I say, to the public. He said the media has been very great. They showed a great understanding and a dignity to keep quiet. He commended the way the news media have worked," he said, in quotes, "to maintain the integrity of this movement." Then the president made some mysterious reference to what has developed from the prayer meetings. And we might make a copy of this broadcast and send it to Jim Engel, National Public Radio, if you want to make a copy of this tape. Reagan, in quotes, "Some wonderful things have come out of this fellowship. A number of public figures have changed as human beings, changed in ways I'd like to talk about, but it might reveal too much about the membership. Fellowships have begun to spring up through the Capitol. They exist now in all three branches of the government, and they have spread throughout the capitals of the world, to parliaments and congresses far away." Without giving any more detail, President Reagan said that since last year's prayer breakfast, members of what he called the fellowship throughout the world have begun meeting with each other throughout the world. Reagan said, in quotes, "Members of our Congress have met with leaders and officials from other countries, approaching them and speaking to them, not on a political level, but on a spiritual level." The president made it sound even more mysterious. The word mysterious was written up twice by Mr. Engel, by characterizing it as a spiritual version of quiet diplomacy. Reagan said, in quotes, "I wish I could say more about it, but it's working precisely because it is private. In some of the most troubled parts of the world, political figures who are old enemies are meeting with each other in a spirit of peace and brotherhood. Reporters asked the White House for more information about who was involved and about the nature of the spreading fellowship the president referred to. After consulting with White House staff, spokesman Larry Speaks said, quote, the matter is private, and it would remain private. In his speech, the only elaboration the president gave was to say that there are such diversities in the world, such terrible and passionate divisions between men, but, he said, prayer and fellowship among the great universe of God's believers are the beginning of understanding and reconciliation, end quote. President Reagan says that in his job, he sees the heroism and the goodness of man and knows in a special way that we are all God's children. Reagan said, in quotes, "The clerk and the king and the communist were made in his image. We all have souls, and we all have the same problem. I'm convinced more than ever that man finds liberation only when he binds himself to God and commits himself to his fellow men, which is the fellowship." And then at the end, later in the broadcast, it went on, "The president returned to more secular matters. He met with the House Armed Services Committee and lobbied for support of the MX missile." Now, in terms of the fellowship, this was February the 1st, just 2 days before, there was an article in the Los Angeles Herald, which I picked up to read not because of any fellowship or anything that the president would be talking about or question about a few days later. It had to do with the King of Tonga. And I always used to laugh about this particular king. It seemed so ridiculous. His name is Tafua Ahua Tupu IV, T-A-U-F-A, and then apostrophe A-H-A-U, then capital T-U-P-O-U IV, Roman numeral IV, the King of Tonga. And he stopped in Los Angeles, and the reason it caught my eye was that Terry Moore was friendly with the King of Tonga, and Johnny Meyer, who's having trouble with the Howard Hughes case, and I'll do more on his court case next week, referred to his friend of the King of Tonga often, and it seemed so far away, and the description of him was so, to me, so absurd that he seemed like a character out of a storybook. But he was visiting in Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles Herald had this story: "The Full Gospel, Businessmen Dine with Kings." On Saturday morning, His Majesty Tafuahua Tupu IV, the King of Tonga and the last living monarch of Polynesia, had gone to Disneyland. It tells about his eating one Mac, two Macs, three Big Macs. He's a huge King of Tonga. He was en route to the White House breakfast with President Reagan, and he was in town for dinner at the Airport Hilton Ballroom with the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship International. The king was not wearing his ceremonial uniform for the occasion. "I don't wear it when I have to," he said. "I might spill soup on it." The fellowship, and 2 days later, Reagan is talking about the mysterious fellowship. The fellowship, however, intended to make him a member right after dinner. A fundamentalist, charismatic, non-denominational organization of Christian laymen, they were devoted to complementing the ministry of local churches by calling businessmen to God. The fellowship has 750,000 laymen attending weekly meetings in 86 countries throughout the world, and hoped in the next 5 years, that's by 1990, that's the year that Mr. William Pierce with Attorney Diary says that the Jews and the blacks will be eliminated in this country, within the next 5 years, they hope to have 40,000 chapters, one in every nation on the globe. King Topu's host, fellowship president and founder Demis Shakarian, has sold more than 1 million copies of his book, The Happiest People on Earth, translated into 13 languages, including Telugu, Thai, Ukrainian. The Full Gospel businessmen were looking for a few big men. In one African country, they introduced 5 Supreme Court justices to Lord Jesus. The Prime Minister of Tonga, the Prince, had already joined the fellowship. 125 of 3,000 Tongans in Los Angeles are members of the fellowship. 120 diplomats and local government officials turn out to greet the king and listen to a lecture about Tonga, which consists of 150 islands in the South Pacific. The businessmen praised the Lord when they heard that Tonga would become an oil-producing country by next year. Among a group sing-along on Amazing Grace, Demos Shakarian stood up and talked about how a simple man from Downey, a dairy man, received a message from God 32 years ago. That's in 1953, just about the time Mr. Sasakawa was giving Reverend Moon his vision of God in the homeland of the Japanese and Korean mafia. In 1953, he got a vision of God, and he set out to bring the businessman to Jesus. He told how in Haiti, Papa Doc lent him a soccer stadium where he saved 10,000 souls in one night, shouting the full gospel for businessmen, hallelujah. earlier, the king admired Demos Shakarian's pickup truck. At the end of the dinner, Demos announced he was sending the truck to Tonga. In addition, he gave the king of Tonga an Oral Roberts videotape. He made the king an honorary member of the Full Gospel Men's Businessman Fellowship International. This is fundamentalist, non-denominational, Christian, 750,000 weekly units in 86 countries. He repeated the fellowship's influence would be felt by every corner of the earth by 1990. This is in the LA Herald. Hallelujah, said the businessman. Praise God. The former dairy farmer from Downey praised God that he had sent him all these advantages in America. They put the king on the airport with an evangelical sense of humor. We now have two kings, King Jesus and the King of Tonga. And then the King of Tonga flew to Washington. As a member of that fellowship group that Ronald Reagan has been so quiet about, and continued the Jesus business that would go now into Tonga. Now, I pulled out of my files articles I had in 1980, that was 5 years ago, with their goal for 1990, the same people, of a group of people from Texas, specifically from Texas, but elsewhere, who have decided to raise, the figure varies, $1 billion was the goal, a million each to start, to turn the entire world Christian. I've mentioned that before, but have not read it to you, one of the articles concerning these people. And these are the movers and shakers, and they, of course, again, meet and converge with the Aryan Nations in Idaho and Mr. Pierce and the National Alliance in Washington and the Ronald Reagan administration and Edwin Meese and the people that put Reagan into the White House in the first place. This is from the Los Angeles Times, June the 7th, 1980. Wealthy join a movement to carry gospel to the world. Nelson Hunt, with H.L. Hunt's son, from the Silver Market Ploy, heads the Evangelical Committee. Houston, Texas, and of course Dallas is where the Republican convention was this year, and the first party was at the home of H.L. Hunt, the state that Hunt had in Texas. More than 100 of America's wealthiest and most powerful people have given or pledged $1 million each to a $1 billion drive led by Nelson Bunker Hunt to save the world by taking the Christian gospel to every soul in the world. The campaign is called Here's Life World. It is one of or more of two chosen ministerial offshoots of the Campus Crusade for Christ International Incorporated Evangelical Movement headquarters in Arrowhead Springs, California. And of course that links down to Willie Cardo and Liberty Lobby and the people that would change history, that there was no concentration camp, no Auschwitz or Dachau. Organizer of Here's Life declined to provide a list of contributors, but William R. Bright, the born-again Christian, founded and heads the Campus Crusade. The article says Bright, a one-time small businessman, again, they started small, launched Campus Crusade in 1951 on the UCLA campus. Again, going back to Nixon was in Congress, elected by Howard Hughes and this same group that put in Reagan in 1946. In 1951 at UCLA, he had an organization that now has 11,500 on the staff and revenues of $49.2 million a year in 1979. I don't know if William R. Bright is related to Bum Bright, who was a co-worker, bought the Dallas Cowboys from Murchison, and I want to do more on that in a few weeks. I don't know if this Bright is related or brother or not. We'll have to look that up. But the head of this organization, when this article was written, was making $49.2 million off of the Campus Crusade of turning the world Christian. And formally, the organization got launched in 1980. Okay, it says Mr. Hunt pledged $10 million to the Here's Life in the beginning 3 years ago, and he's given considerably more since. To William R. Bright, Hunt personally pledged $10 million. Hunt, a publicity-shy Texas tycoon whose name is associated with the soybean scandal, a collection of soybeans and silver, is doing more than silver accumulating. He's saving souls. He's chairman of the International Committee of Here's Life, Others who have endorsed the program include former President Gerald Ford, Special Prosecutor Leon Jaworski. We'll take a break now. This is time. The tape is just about to run out. We'll go back to the membership of this. It goes back, again, to the people who killed Kennedy and the overthrow of the country in 1963. Let's take a one-minute break, and then we'll go back to the gospel and indoctrinating the world.